Hello, hello, and welcome to the show on this Monday. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, that's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and hey, join us on this journey. Doesn't even feel like a Monday, but it is. And like Ray will tell you soon, we got a really good show. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. Like always, shoot us your emails. We'll probably get to some this show. If not, maybe on Friday's show at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out the website. We've got a lot of stuff. You can hear all of our old interviews. Check out photos, predictions, everything. And that's at rayandtaytoday.com. Like always, hit us up on the social media sites, Facebook, Twitter. We're kind of everywhere. You could even hear old shows on iTunes at Ray and Tay Today. You know, check us out on iTunes. So, Ray, let them know. Hey, you know what? Before you tell them about the show, I got to say, you know, I don't feel old, but I got to say, the MTV Music Awards, you know, we talk about music on our show. We just, you know, had some stuff. I wasn't feeling it, man. And I try to always look at it, you know, through my, you know, son, who's 13, through his eyes or, you know, teenage eyes. I was like, I don't want to be the old guy. MTV, man, that was a rough show. Shout out to Brooklyn, though. Brooklyn
shout
did their thing
Brooklyn.
Hosting it.
I want somebody to count how many times Brooklyn and shout out to Brooklyn was said in that show. And we have a guest today from Brooklyn.
Yes.
Originally.
Oh, yeah.
So that'll be a nice little rapper. We'll bring him see how he goes full circle, starts in Brooklyn, ends in Arizona, comes back, plays for the Dodgers, and then plays for the Mets. So, yeah, let's get into it. Let's see what we're going to get into. We've got a lot of breaking news. So we'll talk quickly about what happened this weekend in golf. We'll talk about some retirement news in the NBA. We got the Little League World Series, the Japanese team.
Japan.
Goes and wins back-to-back championships. Good for them. NFL Week 3, the only critical week in the preseason. We've got some happenings. The Jets are just a mess. Hot off the presses, breaking news in Major League Baseball. We'll talk to our guest about this, too. Matt Harvey. Looks like he might have some damage in his elbow. So we'll get into all of that. And then, of course, we've got our guest. So Paul LaDuca, four-time All-Star with several teams, but most notably with the Dodgers through most of his career, played with the Mets, the Marlins. So that should be great. We'll talk a lot of baseball with him, and then after that we'll get into a little bit of our predictions. We'll give a little preview of the Cy Youngs and the MVP races, plus the division
pennant races.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about in baseball. Well, so let's jump right in.
Let's do it.
Breaking news. Let's get into it.
Well, I want to just give a shout-out to, you know, they're doing the Barclays. They did it this week. And Adam Scott, you know, he just continues to have a great season. Shot 11 under, won $1.4 million. Goodness gracious, Ray. This money is crazy. But shout-out to Adam Scott. Tiger Woods came in fourth. You know, you had Justin Rose who was there. And then second place, your boy Graham how do you say his name? Graham DeLatte. I mean, I thought for a second Graham might take it from him, but Adam is a cool cat under pressure. So we got to give him a shout out in this the FedEx Chase and see who gets the points and wins the golf series. NASCAR sort of does the same with, you know, when they do their playoff with the Chase. So it's kind of interesting. And then, you know, hey, we got some stuff popping off in tennis. I figure we get to the U.S. Open before we even get into it. Yeah. I think it's kind of exciting. You got any predictions? Who you looking to win out there in Queens?
Flushing Meadows. I tell you what, I hate to go with the favorites there, but you got to think Serena Williams
will
steamroll through
the women's
bracket. And then the men's will be interesting because Rafael Nadal looks like he's back.
I think
Djokovic is back on.
You think Djokovic?
Yeah, on the hard surface. I think Novak's back. I think he had a couple of hiccups. I mean, he was just looked like he was unbeatable for about a year. So I like Novak. I like Novak.
Okay, well, just to be different, and Sloane Stephens, she won today. I hope she can do something, you know, for the Americans. But I'm going to go, you know, with Nadal, just to be a little bit different. So like you said, the NBA, man, you know, hey, before we get to the retiring three total, who I think will go to Hall of Fame together, shout out to Antoine Jameson, who signed with the Clippers. I think a nice little veteran scorer off the bench. So now they've got the Clippers have got Jameson and Byron Mullins, and you know, a couple little players off the bench. You know, the Phoenix Suns guys, Dudley. Clippers are going to be ready. This is going to be a real good season. And what about the Hall of Fame class 5 years from now? Jason Kidd, Allen Iverson, and today's retiree, Tracy McGrady. What if, right? What if McGrady never got hurt?
What if Grant Hill never got hurt and they played together in Orlando?
Oh, yeah, Grant Hill retires too. That's right, those four. That's going to be an amazing Hall of Fame ceremony. I think they all four will go in as first-time ballots. And
what would be great is Kidd and Hill together, because they were co-rookies of the year when they came out in 94. So that was great.
McGrady and Grant Hill deserve it, first-time ballot too. They'll be right there. You got to be
a great Hall of Fame class, for sure.
And listen, for some of the Syracuse fans, we got some Syracuse heads that listen to the show. Looks like James Sutherland has got a little training camp contract with the Bobcats. So he could potentially get on that team, because I think they need some shooting. So if Sutherland can knock it down, maybe he'll make the roster. That would be pretty awesome, you know.
Yeah,
so
quick shout-out to the Japanese kids winning the Little League World Series. They beat California. They come back. Oh, that was fun. I love it when those kids play well, and it's fun. It's a
Did
fun
you see how big some of these guys were, though?
Well,
with California, Connecticut. No, but this one kid was 5'7", 205. I was like, wow. Well, I think this is on Connecticut. But, these kids played hard, and it's great. And, hey, Japan is they're starting to dominate, man. They're starting to dominate. And let's go over to week three, man, in the NFL. I mean, we had the Niners beat the Vikings pretty tough last night. The Niners are looking good. But when we start to talk about the season starting and we see some of these jobs, and it looks like the Bills, Kevin Cobb, a third concussion, might be done with his career. They just traded for Thaddeus Lewis from the Lions, who used to be with the Browns, and then signed Matt Leinart. But Jeff Toole looks like he's going to start week one if E.J. Manuel is not healthy.
An undrafted rookie quarterback starting in week one up in Buffalo. That's not how Doug Marrone figured
he'd
start.
That's not too exciting.
He'd start his pro coaching career.
Yeah, and then I'm pretty, you know, have to give our, you know, props out and just our regards to Jonathan Cooper, the great offensive guard who got hurt, broke his leg out for the season for the Arizona Cardinals. That's sad, and they just had a bunch of injuries. There's been quite a few injuries. You just feel like whoever has survived through the 3 weeks of training camp, nobody will really play majorly and get hurt for week four, hopefully. So, you know, it's pretty much set, like the teams and rosters. And New Orleans, they lost Will Smith.
Yeah, Will
their
Smith
big,
today. They announced that he's out with a knee injury.
Out for the season.
And speaking of lost three games, Felton, the fullback for the Vikings, is gone.
Jerome.
So he's gone for three weeks. So that's going to be, you know, Adrian Peterson.
Heard Adrian Peterson,
gone for a while. But
maybe
he's
get
back
Toby
in
to block.
Week four. Well, mm-hmm. Toby Gerhart isn't. He's built like a fullback, but he's not geared to be a fullback. But he might have to. He might have to be pressed into duty. And then the Jets. Let's just finish with the Jets. They're a mess. Sanchez is hurt. He probably may or may not be ready to start week one if that's Rex's decision. Geno Smith did nothing in particular to earn himself a starting job. But I'm not that upset. You know, he's only 22 years old, and he's a rookie. Yeah. So he played like a rookie, looked like a rookie. Three interceptions. But the Jets
stepped
just
out of bounds in the end zone, got the safety.
This is going to be they call it Gretkowski, right? It was because he made it famous stepping out of the end zone when he was in Oakland, right? Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Anyway, so the Jets.
Well,
are
how
a mess.
About Terrell Pryor though? He might win that Oakland job, which might be kind of interesting for the Raiders.
Yeah,
so,
I never was a big
NFL.
Fan of Matt Flynn's.
No, my Steelers are 0-3 in preseason. Your Cowboys beat the Bengals. That'll be on Hard Knocks this week, which has been a great show. My Steelers, man, Jarvis Jones to the hospital, but he's okay. It is what it is. And like you said, we're going to have our guests joining us soon for some MLB talk. Paul LaDuca. You know, it's so funny because he's around our age, a little bit younger than us, but I can remember him like it was yesterday, you know, with the Dodgers and the Mets and, you know, a little cup of coffee with the Marlins and the Nationals. But definitely a solid catcher and a solid player.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And he had an interesting story, too, because he came from Brooklyn and then moved out to your parts, to Arizona, and was a walk-on, you know, to begin his career, and started out at Glendale Community College, then went on to Arizona State and had a monster year at Arizona State, and then still had to play three, 4 years in the minors, and then made it up to the bigs with the Dodgers. So an interesting journey from a guy that, and also any guy that plays for the Dodgers and then comes back and plays for the Mets, that's pretty cool, right? That's that's history. That's baseball history right there.
The connection, definitely. It's fascinating. And I think do we have, oh no, we just got a listener. We got some people that are calling in listening. So LaDuca will join us soon. Let's get into a little bit of baseball, man. I mean, I kind of think the Red Sox made a statement this weekend to the Dodgers, letting them know, if we see you in the World Series, we're ready. The Red Sox are ready.
Yeah, they really are. And the Dodgers, I mean, look, the Dodgers are ready too. So that would be quite a matchup there. But that National League, those three or four teams in the National League fighting for the best record in the National League, I mean, those are all great teams. So that first and second round in the National League is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, no, I got to believe, and it's going to be, you know, something that it's going to be exciting, and we'll have to talk to Paul about that. Is this him on the line? No, that's not a...
No, we got a caller in waiting.
Okay, all right. So the one thing I will say before we get back to the baseball that I just wanted to sort of end off with the football that I think is kind of interesting, you know, a lot of people are looking at the Niners and the Broncos and Seahawks and these teams, but it seems like there's always going to be some sleeper team in the NFL. You know, like last year, you know, we had, you know, these teams make the playoffs like the Vikings that nobody expected. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Saints bounce back. Maybe it's the Cowboys this year. Maybe the Steelers jump back in. You know, you just don't know. But, you know, people look to, you know, the Patriots and the Broncos, the Falcons, Seahawks, and Niners. But I got to tell you, Vernon Davis, yo Terps, looks incredible playing everywhere, just like Fitzgerald. They got him in the slot. They got him at tight end. They got him outside as a receiver. Vernon Davis is going to be, watch, a stud this year in the NFL. That's just something I had to, you know, I had to give my Terps my love. You know, 94 alum, you know, my Terps stand up. But, you know, let me ask you this. Do you think Carson Palmer is going to get Fitzgerald the ball this year?
Yeah, I think Carson Palmer and Fitzgerald may be a phenomenal – I don't know how many games they'll win, but it will be a phenomenal fantasy combination. I mean, people don't remember that Carson Palmer, you know, was a superstar before your Steelers took out his knee. And then he came back and had several years where he was kind of a decent game manager, still had a big arm, but last year threw for 4,000 yards. So he's the real deal.
Yeah.
Now, hold on, I think we've got I think we've got Paul LaDuca here about to join us. Hello, this is Paul LaDuca.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man, good. Just enjoying Southern California weather right now.
Well, good for you. We were just talking about, you know, the Brooklyn kid makes it out to Arizona and then comes back east, and now he's settled back west. So that's good for you. So welcome to the show. We really appreciate you calling in.
What's up, Paul?
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Always a Mets fan at heart. Grew up a Dodger, but grew up a Mets fan, and always good to speak to some Mets people.
So speaking of
definitely,
Mets, let me jump into
it.
I don't know if you heard the news today, but the Mets announced that Matt Harvey has a partial tear in his elbow, And they're going to wait a couple weeks, and it might require Tommy John surgery. So first thing is, what do you think about the kid's performance so far? And, you know, as a catcher, I'm sure you've worked with pitchers that have come off Tommy John surgery. And what do you think about his prospects now, potentially having to go through that and miss a year?
Well, I mean, they're in a good position where he could probably sit for the rest of the year. You know, the Tommy John surgery now, they got that thing so darn good. They even come back a little stronger. But to me, you know, it's a full year with the Tommy John. And then you got to give them another full year till they're completely back. Some of them come back a little bit, you know, better than others, depending on he's young. So I would think it'd be not an issue. Hopefully it doesn't go to that point. I know it's a disappointing day for a lot of Mets fans. It's a disappointing day for myself, you know. Matt, to me, is, you know, the closest thing we've seen in a Met uniform since Doc Gooden. And it's to me, he's electrified the fans on a team. You know, it's a 500 team or below 500, but, you know, they come out to watch him pitch. And hopefully this is something that he can, you know, get by, because I really feel the Mets are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I have some Met fans calling the show telling us that they're cursed, and I'm saying just calm down, especially because he's young, and people come back stronger after this Tommy John surgery. Like you said, it happens far too frequently these days, but the flip side is that the medicine is pretty good, so they got the pitchers coming back. Hey, Paul, let me ask you something. You get these stories in baseball. You don't really have these stories in other sports. So you were a 25th round pick in 93, and then you broke into the majors with the Dodgers in 98 at age 26. So what was that like? What was it like playing in your first big league game, you know, after you had been a star at Arizona State and a star in community college, and then you paid your dues in the minors, and then you show up, and what's that like? What's that first major league baseball game like?
You can't explain it. In Colorado, seemed like was my spot. I think the man upstairs designated that place because I got called up there in 1998 for unfortunate situations. To be honest, I wish I would have never got called up for that because Charles Johnson's grandmother passed away, so he was on bereavement list. And I just got called up for 3-4 days. Got sent down in Colorado. Got called back up later in the year when we were in Colorado. Same thing in 99 with the Seymour Colorado was going to do, but I was never going to get called up there or sent down from Denver. But, I'll never forget my first at bat, I flew out, and my second at bat, I got a base hit. And then you don't remember rounding the bases, you're just on air. I mean, I'll never forget that moment. I've always had that baseball, and something you'll never forget. You know, like you said, I spent a lot of years in the minor leagues and worked hard to get where I was, and it's satisfaction. It's hard to get to the big leagues hard enough. It's really tough to stick. And 98, 99, 2000, I was literally up and down over 25 times. So it was difficult process, you know, especially being behind Mike, and then they went and traded for Charles Johnson, and then they went and traded for Todd Hundley, three pretty good catchers. So I just had to sit and wait until I was old enough to get the job. And really, 2001, I'm 29, I was a full-time starter. That was the first time I really was a full-time starter.
Wow. So, listen, Paul, I got to ask you, this is Eric Taylor. You know, we've spoken to, we've had Bob Brenly on our show who had a similar journey as you did, you know, coming up to the leagues. And I'm kind of curious for you, growing up, and we're around your age, who were your sort of idols, and were you into catchers? Did you always know you were going to be a catcher? Were you, like, big into, you know, Carlton Fisk and Johnny Bench and Gary Carter? Who were your big, you know, idols in baseball growing up?
Well, I wasn't really a catcher guy. I was more just a baseball guy to begin with. And, you know, I was a Mets fan,
right.
So Lenny Dykstra was my guy, you know. you know, because the stature and me being a little guy, I was always the smallest guy of the team. I was 5'1", 5'2", my freshman year in high school. So I grew all to what I am now, 5'9", with cleats on. Thank you very much. But to my sophomore year. So, you know, you associate with guys like Lenny, you know, a guy that would run through the wall for you. And somewhat the way I played and just the passionate that he did. But, you know, my main guy I watched was Paul Molitor. I mean, I just loved the way he hit, and he used the whole field. I used to study his tapes and watch him because he was a guy that was a little bit like me. didn't have pop. He had pop. I mean, a lot of people think pop is home runs. But to me, you hit doubles and triples and extra base hits, that's pop. And Paul was like, he hit the ball every which way. And I always used to watch his swing. He just had no really movement at all. But a little bit like Puig, the way he hits and goes from there.
Right.
He's so strong. But those were probably my two guys growing up. And when it came to, when I got into catching, you know, I got to catching every day later in my career. You know, guys like Pudge and Ivan, you know, like Ivan Rodriguez, he was the best.
Yeah.
You would watch guys like him and try to look at his mechanics and stuff like that, because I was new at the position when I first started. I started in 1996, when my coach just basically threw me a glove and told me, listen, they're either going to be a mister or you're going to become a catcher. So what are my options? Where's the gear? So that's how it went down.
Okay. That's pretty cool. So listen, obviously you had, you know, a pretty good success at being a catcher and being a four-time All-Star. Give us, you know, a little bit of experience, because I know it just must have been amazing, not just to, you know, your journey to make it to the bigs, but what was it like to be in those four All-Star games and to, like, hang out with some of, you know, the greatest stars and Hall of Famers ever? Like, what was your point of view on that? And, like, you know, did you guys get autographs, trade jerseys, baseball cards? Like, what do you guys do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, see, I was a baseball junkie when I was a kid. You know, I liked all kinds of sports, but I was the kid that collected the baseball cards, the jerseys, and all that. Yeah. And I have all my stuff from my All-Star games. It was enjoyable. You know, those things you can't replace. And to be a Major League All-Star, you dream to get to the big leagues as a kid or want to put on that uniform. And to get to All-Star game was unreal. 2006, voted by the fans, was just unreal in New York to represent the Mets. And, you know, those things you don't forget. You don't forget them because your family enjoyed those times with you as well. You're right. Getting to share locker rooms with just the Hall of Famers, the bottom line. And other people, you know, I get to take pictures of Muhammad Ali in a couple of those All-Star games. And you meet guys like Toby Keith. You meet guys you would never meet, you know. So, yeah, those things you can't replace, something I'll never forget and something you never take for granted. And, you know, those All-Star games were something I always cherish.
So Paul, as a Brooklyn-born kid, right, you go out to Arizona, where Tay is now. He's a New York City kid, but he's in Arizona now.
I'm out here in Scottsdale. Beautiful.
you do your damage in Arizona. Then you come back. And you finally make it in 06 to the Mets. You finally make it to the playoffs, right? So you win 97 games and you make the playoffs. And you guys were heavily favored that year, especially in the NLCS against the Cardinals. They had won 100 games the previous 2 years, but I think they only won 83 games that year. What do you remember about that crazy, you know, finally making it to the playoffs in your career, and then that crazy 7-game series with the Cardinals?
I was something you think about. I think about to this day. You know, I mean, I still can't believe we lost the game 7 after Andy caught that ball. It's more of now you've come over a guy that I've just come. This was meant to be. I mean, you got to understand. They literally made it into the playoffs. They were collapsing, the Cardinals. They made it into the playoffs. They beat the Padres, I want to believe, on the last day. So
yeah,
we went to LA
right,
first round. We swept them. And then they, you know, they won. And, you know, they're dangerous because, you know, we knew they were going to be dangerous just because of Tony and La Russa. And you have a guy like Albert. And at the time, the closer, Wainwright. So they had some solid, you know, obviously pieces. But to me, you know, you could talk about where we lost it. So we lost that series in game two. We beat them in game one. Game two, we had them buried. We could have been up 2-0 going to St. Louis. And then we could have just taken one of those games there and we would have been fine. We just blew a lead in game two, and I think that made it a series and put our backs against the wall. And something, you know, to me, I really feel we was the best team I played on, and we were the best team, but we didn't win. I mean, we weren't. I guess we weren't the best team. You got to look at it that way. It just wasn't meant to be. I mean, after Andy catches that ball, then we have the bases loaded in one out or no out, and we don't score.
Yeah, you walked, right? I think you walked in that ninth right in front of Beltran.
Yeah, Beltran, yeah. We had a couple shots innings before that after Andy caught the ball, I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah, everybody
first ball hit, Roland threw down the line. And we were supposed to take advantage of that. We had the momentum, and we didn't. And I think the momentum sort of double whammied us and switched back to them when we didn't score in that inning. And, you know, that's what I remember most. We should have won that series in game two, and we didn't. And it's something I'll remember. Believe me, it eats at me here and there.
So, you know what, Paul, I want to ask you, too, because, you know, talking about that, looking at baseball now, like, what, particularly this season, I mean, are there any favorite players you have? And when you're looking at, like, you know, a Puig and a Trout and some of these guys, you know, and of course, Molina, Yadier is amazing, and the season has really been so exciting. Do you sort of have any predictions? Do you sort of see the Dodgers or the Braves hanging on, even without Hayward? And kind of give us your World Series matchup. I'm kind of curious, you know, as a former player, like how do you sort of view the game and analyze it today?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting. You know, when it comes in the playoff time, the Dodgers are going to be dangerous. And the reason why is, you know, offensively, they can score. My only worry with the Dodgers, I mean, the 1-2 punch. Greinke, his fastball is back up to 94, 95. It's really weird. His velocity since he got hurt has gone up, and he's returning back to where he was when he was dominant. And Kershaw, we already know he's dominant. So they got that lefty-righty for that short series. What worries you is the bullpen. Kenley Jansen, he's been phenomenal at the back end. The worry is getting to that point. I mean, the Dodgers are on such a roll. When Hanley is healthy, they go right, left, right, and they're dangerous. But their bullpen is a worry. St. Louis, to me, Yadier Molina is the best player in the league. He really is. If you look, you can say what you want about, or in the National League, you say what you want about offensive numbers or whatever. When that man is behind home plate, the Cardinals win. When he's not behind home plate, they don't win. That's the bottom line. So they're dangerous and they're battle-tested. And if they get in the playoffs, they've been there before. They know how to win those type of games. But I really feel the Dodgers are the team to beat. And the reason why is I just think the Braves strike out a little too much when it comes to playoff time.
Right. What about the American League?
Well, the American League, to me, I mean, that's the whole other situation out there. Detroit, to me, is the team to beat. I mean, you got the best two hitters, the best hitter in the game, might be putting up the best 2 years by right hand of all time. I mean, you already go back to Joe D. I mean, the guy's sick. And
playing through
injury, they got great starting pitching, but their bullpen is the worry. And so you look at teams like Pittsburgh that have those strong bullpens, if they can somehow squeak in the playoffs, they could be dangerous because, let me tell you something. Being in playoff games and being in tight situations, your bullpen is key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So, Paul, let me ask you about the game today. What do you think about the things, the changes they're trying to make, right? So obviously the DH always comes up. You know, will the National League ever get rid of the DH? Interleague has become a staple, but they did the realignment, so it's not like the Interleague that started in 97, and then instant replay. They're trying to put that in, obviously expand it for the playoffs, just because you know, they've seen the success and the uproar when they make bad calls. So what do you think about the state of the game? What do you think about what you know, what they're doing, the little tweaks they're making, the playoffs? They added an extra, you know, a one-game play-in. So things have kind of changed over the last 10, 20 years. What do you think about the state, you know, what baseball is doing to make the game, you know, more competitive and maybe even to have more teams and more cities involved later in the season?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have no issue with the changes they're making. And we're going to an age now where I can totally see. My one thing I do not like is the second playoff team, because to me, you play 162 games. If you're going to have a wild card, it should be one. If you're going to play 162 games and then go one game to decide, to me, that doesn't make sense. And then now the wild card puts them, obviously, in a pickle, because you're going to have to use your better pitcher for the one-day playoff game. You might see managers try to gamble a little bit, try to win that one playoff game, knowing, hey, if I'm going to beat the next team, I need my number one and two and maybe start somebody else, you know, depending how the season ends and how they get there. I don't know. To me, a one-game playoff for two teams for one spot is to nothing. It should be a three-game playoff to me, the better team. I mean, one game.
Yeah, best of three would be
game,
right.
You know?
Yeah. You're totally right. Best of three would be fair.
Especially as it lines up this year with that NL Central looking so competitive that, you know, it could be Pittsburgh, it could be Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, or St. Louis, Cincinnati, or St. Louis. Two of those three teams are going to have great records, probably win 90-some-odd games and have to play each other for a one-game play-in. That's tough.
No, I mean, there's a possibility that all three make the playoffs. There really is.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
The Dodgers, you know, and win their division. Obviously, the Braves, and then the three other teams. And, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I know it brings a little bit more excitement, another team into the playoff realm, but I think the world of the wild card's over. That extra game is going to hurt because it uses up that bullpen for later on, and it's going to be really, really tough for those wild card teams. But maybe that's what Bud was trying to think. Listen, let's reward the people that win the division, which probably is the right thing to do. You can say what you want about the instant replay and all that stuff. I agree with some of it. The game, one thing about baseball, there's no clock, and I've never understood. If they want to speed up the game, cut commercial times down a half a minute. You know, they worry about the speed of the game, but they don't worry about the 3 minutes and 15 seconds. It used to be a minute 45. Every year it's getting longer and longer in between innings, yet they're yelling at the guys on the field, they're too slow. So, you know what, there's got to be a little bit of give and take.
Hey, Paul, before we let you go, and we totally appreciate you coming on and talking with us, two things. Number one, who was the best pitcher? I'm kind of curious, because I know you played with a couple of different teams. I was thinking that maybe it was Kevin Brown, but who was the best pitcher that you sort of caught? And how was that dynamic and the relationship between you and either your favorite or the best pitcher you worked with? Was it Kevin Brown or Hernandez?
It's really hard, but that's a hard one to say. I mean, Kevin, as a starter, I think was the most misunderstood guy I ever caught. He was a great teammate, competitor. I think a lot of the press didn't like him because he didn't give the press the time of day. But he was... He was a bull. I mean, he was the guy, when he went 21, I want to say in 2000, I caught him in one of his last games, and he was just the bull. You knew when he was going to get the ball that he was going to be, going to go out there and put up his, zeros for you. I caught Beckett. I caught Burnett when I was with the Marlins and all those guys. They were all dynamic, but no one for that 2 year span was like Gagne. I mean, it was really, really dynamic, and he... You knew him. He was the one guy that I caught that it was just like I could just play around with. I mean, he was that good. I think a lot of people don't realize how really good he was as a starter. He was 95, 96 as a starter. Everybody always talks about how he went to the bullpen and all this, but he was pretty good, and he had multiple Tommy John surgeries before, and he just had devastating stuff, but he was one of those guys that he just sat around and thought about it too much. So when they moved him to the bullpen, he didn't have to think, and he took the thought process out of it, and he showed what he was really made of. And, he was just – it was unhittable. I mean, I used to see guys at home plate reactions. That was the one guy that I was like, wow. I mean, Luis Gonzalez, guys that had MVP years used to laugh. They used to laugh when he used to throw that changeup because they knew they had no shot. So –
Hey, Paul, so let's get you out of here. We don't want to take up too much of your time, but tell us what you're up to these days. Tell us, you had a great career, and now what are you doing outside of baseball? What are you up to, and what's this phase of your life all about?
Well, I do some Dream Foundation stuff with the Dodgers out here in L.A. I've done some ESPN stuff for college baseball, did a lot of work for them. So I'm in the broadcast booth, and now I do some horse racing stuff for TVG, always been part of my background. So doing some TV for a couple of networks, always watching baseball games, and I'm loving life out here in California. It's beautiful. Still got family back in New York, so always got to give the love back to Brooklyn.
That's good.
You appreciate the love you gave us on the show today. We really appreciate it. We'd love to have you back. So, we have a slogan, and we're talking sports with friends. So friends and family, so you're part of the family. We really appreciate all of your time.
Anytime, man. And enjoy Scottsdale, man. You better be wearing
Yeah, no,
shorts.
Paul, listen, I got to – no, definitely. And I got to tell you, Paul, you've got a lot of fans out here in Arizona and Scottsdale. You know, I told different people that I know they're into baseball and, you know, have even played out here at you know, some Grand Canyon University out
yeah.
here that are big, that, you know, they're like, oh, man, we love Paulo Duca. So you got a lot of love out here, man. I got to let you know that.
I appreciate it. All my homies in Arizona, believe me, I spent many times playing games at Scottsdale Muni. I used to go watch the Phoenix Giants games and watch Wendell Kim run across the field when I was a kid. That was their only AAA team when I was a kid. We didn't have the Diamondbacks. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I played
okay,
in almost all those fields in Arizona. So, and I know a lot
awesome.
Of area coaches and played junior college ball there. So, yeah, a lot of love to Arizona baseball, believe me.
Great, great. Thanks so much, Paul. It's been great talking to you, man.
That's awesome.
You bet,
thanks
guys.
Again, Paul. We appreciate it.
You bet. Anytime.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Awesome, 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 man. An all-star catcher. Just a great guy. Interesting that he, you know, Lenny Dykstra was his guy and that he, you know, like he said, he was, you know, pretty 5'1 in ninth grade and didn't start off as a catcher. Did not know that. So that's a nice little tidbit.
Paul Molitor, that's another nice guy to have. Paul Molitor, of course, wins an MVP at short and wins an MVP in center field. So
and what a swing he had, right?
Right there. Yeah, Paul Molitor was a true professional. So a couple of
definitely.
Nice guys to you know, Lenny Dykstra's motor and Paul Molitor's skills and professionalism. So that's
well,
interesting. Like,
yeah, no. And you know, let's piggyback on what he was talking about and even talking about with the Dodgers. When we look at the rest of the season and the run that they've been on, and you look at the, you know, we talked about looking at the Cy Young MVP. Looking at the NL Cy Young, I mean, Harvey goes down, you know, so you got to believe that he's going to be out of the running. I mean, for me, it's got to be your guy, Kershaw. You know, my guy, Johnny Cueto, you know, has been hurt for so long. But to me, Kershaw looks like, with the type of season he's having and just his team and his dominance, he's, you know, he's such a horse that, you know, he could, you know, wind up getting the Cy Young. I don't know. Who are you thinking? I mean, the AL is got a little bit more maybe competition, but in the NL, do you sort of go with him or do you like Wainwright? Because I like Wainwright as well.
Well, you know, I picked Kershaw before the year, and then
yeah.
Matt Harvey's had himself a fantastic year, but they're going to shut him
definitely.
Down. So I got to believe that in the National League, it's got to be Adam Wainwright or Clayton Kershaw. But I'll stick with Kershaw. I think he's you know
yeah.
he might win. You could make an outside argument that it's a Verlander type of season for Kershaw, where he could be in the running for MVP and Cy Young, because you know we'll talk about MVP in a sec. But that
yeah.
MVP vote in the National League is going to be split, you know, several ways because Yadier Molina went down on I think it was July 30th, so he hasn't played
but
for a while,
back.
And he
yeah.
and he might only play 130 or some odd games. So. Kershaw
well,
will get
also,
the MVP also.
Yeah, but also, you know what I like about Kershaw? I mean, he's got 188 strikeouts. He's going to have a well over, like, you know, two and change strikeout type season. I mean, the seven losses, you know, maybe is a little high for, you know, some people would say for Cy Young. But, I mean, you know, the guy is just, you give him the ball. And, you know, sort of just
get
like, you know, what LaDuca was saying, you know, he's a bull, he's a horse like Kevin Brown. Kevin Brown would pitch many innings. And that's what I respect about, you know, Kershaw and Kevin Brown in that sense that, you know, they sort of are a little similar in that sense. Now, in American League, though, you got Max Scherzer, you've got your boy Verlander, you know, you've got a couple different guys
I think save your breath. It starts and ends with Max Scherzer. This guy the season of seasons. I mean, he's 19-1. The thing is, he doesn't even have the best ERA on his team.
No,
but
no.
You can't deny that this guy, Aníbal Sánchez, I think, has a better ERA. But this guy is having an unbelievable season. And if he doesn't win, I mean, he'll be, you know, as close to unanimous as
he can
be.
You know, Darwish and Hernandez are still pitching well,
too.
Yeah,
you know what it is? it's similar
to... No, no, it's
to
such a dominant
Mike
season.
Trout
such...
and Cabrera last year. You know, Mike Trout was just unfortunate. He put an MVP season up, but he went up against a guy that put up a triple crown season, right? So it's like, you know, in poker, he had four kings and only to be topped by four aces or
aces,
the royal
yeah.
straight plus. You know what I mean? So these guys are all – you, Darvish, is having a great season. And there's, oh, but, yeah, Max Scherzer, 19-1. I mean –
it's incredible. No.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, honestly, that to me is what's going to put the Dodgers over the edge. I mean, the Tigers over the edge. I mean, you know, the Rays are going to still be tough and the Red Sox, but I just think the Tigers, the combination of the starters with that offense, the Tigers are going to, I mean, they're just going to be, I think, hard to beat.
That's a lot like the formula the Dodgers are putting up there, right? We talked about that on our last show. So they put up Greinke, Kershaw, and Ryu, and the Tigers are going to put up, you know, they'll probably start. You're going to win the Cy Young, potentially, Kershaw. I mean,
Scherzer. And be the number two.
And be the number two starter, because they're going to have so much respect for Justin Verlander, who, ironically enough, doesn't pitch great in the playoffs historically. But, you know, Max Scherzer wins the Cy Young, and he's the number two starter. Oh, and by the way, the guy that pitched a perfect game, but Joyce messed that up and is leading the team in ERA, is Anibal Sanchez, and he's going to be the number three hitter. So you got that as your rotation, and then, of course, you've got, you know, that fielder and Cabrera, and even, you know, they got Iglesias back. You figured they're going to miss Johnny Peralta, but they got Iglesias, and Omar Infante is now hitting. So, I mean, this team, Victor Martinez, this team is tough. I tell you what, that Detroit Tiger team is tough to beat.
So let's look at the MVP. What are you thinking? I mean, Yadier Molina, like you said, I think he'll play enough games. I could see him getting MVP. I mean, you know, some people could say Andrew McCutchen. I mean, you know, hey, even in the Cardinals, John Jay's playing great, different guys. Who you like in the National League?
Your boy Paul Goldschmidt.
Can I tell you, Goldschmidt, man, if the Diamondbacks could have held on, I just don't think he could get it now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that they needed to sort of hold on for him. Who would you give it to?
So I got to think in the National League, it all comes down to if Yadier Molina can get back healthy. Because, like Paul said, like Paul LaDuca said, he said when he's on the dime, you know, when he's catching, they're winning, and his impact can be felt offensively. Defensively,
managing, everywhere.
You know, the pitching staff. So this guy has an impact, you know, second to none on a baseball game. So the question is, if he only plays 130 games or so, is that, you know, can you win the MVP? And I think you can. I mean, you look back, and Josh Hamilton, the year he won it, only played about 130 games. It was a year when George Brett won it. He only played, I think, a little less than 120 games. So it's not unprecedented for a guy.
But he's got a great 35. I mean, gosh.
Yeah, and his job is the hardest, right? He plays in the National League, so he can't take days off in DH. And
he's still got 400 at-bats. That's still a lot. Other guys have got like 470, 480, so he's up there.
Clutch. And his team's got, you know, fell back, but now they're back in contention for not only the division, but the best record in baseball. So, yeah, I have to think Yadier Molina, but it's going to be closer than it should be only because he's going to miss games. So, like I said, Kershaw will get some votes, McCutchen will get some votes, Goldschmidt will get some votes, Cargill will get some votes, but I think ultimately it's Yadier Molina.
Yeah.
Now,
no,
what about you? What do you think about in the American League? Who's your American League MVP? Is there a debate, or is that runaway?
Listen. I'll tease you, right? I mean, Adrian Beltre, Joel Mauer. They're having nice seasons. You know,
David
Ortiz.
Trout, yeah.
Yeah. No. You know, Davis has played well. Trout's played well, but there's only one guy. I mean, what Cabrera is doing, Miguel Cabrera, I mean, 93 hits, the guy is giving you the homer. I mean, 42 homers. He even threw in one stolen base just to make you happy. You
and
know
his
what
body
I mean?
Is beaten up. He shouldn't be playing. He should be resting. You know, this guy.
No, that's what I give him credit. He's playing. I mean, he's playing hurt. I'm sorry, three
DHing
stolen bases
him.
And one triple.
Third. It's funny because he's in the American League, and they have the option to DH him. Well, they also have Victor Martinez that they want to use. And but he's playing third base, you know, beat up and everything. He's playing.
But 360 is his batting average. I mean, what else can you say? That's ridiculous.
I mean, he's having a better season than last season. He may not win the Triple Crown just because of Chris Davis.
And that's okay. Yeah.
But 360, 42 homers, and
128. 685 slugging. 685 slugging. I don't think anybody else is over 600 slugging. No, everybody's in the fours and fives.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
His OPS is 1.135.
I mean this
guy,
is one of those seasons.
I say he's playing softball.
It's like a DiMaggio season. Yeah, it's softball, right? I know. he's definitely played softball. So, you know, hey, look, it was, you know, we just had one of those great shows. Paul LaDuca, you know, was incredible. We're talking, you know, great baseball. When you look at the pennant races, right, and we're coming down the home stretch. We already talked about the NL Central, and that's going to be – I mean, look, for both of us, we both – you know, we wish the Pirates the best, right? The Cardinals just got their ring. We want the Reds. We want all three of them in the playoffs, but you got to just root. Anybody who's, you know, just a baseball fan, you got to root for the Pirates. It's great for baseball, though, right? All these teams like the Pirates, Reds, Dodgers, these are teams that, you know, haven't won recently – and to see them all pushing for the playoffs.
The Pirates haven't been over 500 and haven't been in the playoffs since Barry Bonds weighed 180 pounds when he was playing in Pittsburgh, and he was a
Why
skinny
did
dude
you say that?
MVPs.
Why are you saying that? No, you're right. And listen, and McCutcheon is clutch. And you know who helps that team a lot? Russell Martin. Russell Martin, the ex-Yankee, is an ex-Dodger, is so solid, just sort of like he comes through, gets you a clutch single, a double, you know, sort of like Raul Ibanez for the Yankees last year with his clutch home runs. But Russell Martin is just, he's solid. He is so solid. And you think Joey Votto can, you know, sort of wake up? And I mean, now he's having a bad season, batting 314 and, you know, doing his thing. But he might be able to carry the Reds, you know, a little bit. And I guess the question is for me, will Johnny Cueto come back? You know,
they just extended him again on the DL. I'm not sure. And even if he does come back, is can you trust him?
So
because
long.
He's going to come back to a serious playoff run, and you know, an NLDS, or first you might have to play that one game playoff, and let's say you win it, then you're playing in an NLDS. Are you ready to put, you know, the ace of your staff, of course, but are you ready to put him out there, you know, after essentially missing the whole season? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Hey, you know, we didn't even talk about, too, Robinson Cano is having a pretty darn good season for the Yankees, too. If the Yankees ever could go on a run, and he's been killing it since A-Rod's been back, Robinson could, be in the conversation, you know, as well. Not win it over Cabrera, but just be in the conversation. But I love the Cardinals, right? I mean, let's look at it, Ray. I mean, with Beltran, Carpenter, Alan Craig, Freeze is maybe starting to wake up a little bit. The Cardinals have got a lot of bats. These guys get singles after singles, hits, clutch hitting, doubles off the wall. The Cardinals are a tough team.
Well, the Cardinals are killing it. I mean, they lead the major leagues. I mean, they're only second to the Red Sox in runs scored. I mean, these guys put up runs, right? And combine that with the pitching that they have, that's a nice combo. That's what I'm saying. These National League matchups, I mean, just the NL Central, they're three
awesome.
Totally different teams, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, and Cincinnati. And so, like Paul LaDuca was saying, you know, he said on the one hand that you know, he doesn't really love the fifth wild card game. I like it, actually. I think it extends the season. And this is exactly the scenario that it was meant for, because you play 162 games, and let's say by one game.
And none of those teams get jerked. Yeah.
Not only that, but I mean, it's the case this year that the Dodgers and the Braves are really good. But let's say, you know, you had the NL West like it was a month and a half ago, where the Dodgers were asleep at the wheel and the Arizona Diamondbacks were a little bit over 500. And then you had these three teams in the NL Central that were all great. And now they're saying, wait a minute, we had a better year than other teams and we can't make the playoffs. So I actually like it, but I do agree with him that it shouldn't be a one-game playoff, right? Yeah, you play 162 games to then lose in a one-game. I mean, that's like, don't even invite me to the playoffs.
Well, and then
really
it does mess up your rotation so much. And,
yeah,
you know, I think even though it gets colder in some of these eastern cities, I think you could work out the scheduling where they could do a best of three. It's not, you know, it's only three games. You know, you're not going to, like, kill it. You know, I don't think we'll get to, like, November 1st. You could do the three games, squeeze them in, and, you know, and still get your best of three. I think they're going to revisit it in a couple of years. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, it's just something that would be better because the one game is so hard, right? You know, to get ready for the next series, do you start your number one? Do you go with your number two? Do you number three? You know, what if you know, you had a wild coach who was like, hey, I'll just go with my middle relievers and have each guy, you know, my studs, each guy do like, you know, two or three innings apiece. You know, so I don't mess up my starters. Maybe I'll just use my bullpen. That would be crazy, right? If somebody just was like, you know, that would be fascinating, you know. That would be something to me where as a baseball fan, you know, you'd be like, wow, like what's going on here, you know. But let me ask you this. This is sort of an interesting question. When you're looking at the AL, we've talked a lot of NL. Looking at the AL, I mean – Oakland, Texas, you know, that sort of battle is probably going to go to the end. You know, it's probably going to come down to pitching between the two of them. But then the AL East, I don't know if the Orioles or the Yankees will have enough mustard, but the Red Sox and Rays, you got to believe they're going to come down to the wire. And that Red Sox lineup, the question is, and they did it against the Dodgers, they put up clutch hits when they had to, you know, won the series, you know, two out of three. Can they hold on against the Rays pitching? And I think they play each other another maybe, what, six games, I'm not sure. Can the Red Sox hold off the Rays and win the AL East?
So they're tied in the loss column right now, right? So the Red Sox are 77-55 and the Rays are 74-55. So I kept saying that the Rays are the team that nobody wants to face because of that weird home field that they have, obviously, but the pitching combination and the hitting and Will Myers and the pitching, Moore is coming back, and then you figure Price is back healthy and they've got, you know, Rodney in the bullpen and they've got all that hitting up and down the lineup. You know, this Rays team, I thought that they would catch the Red Sox. And I still think they will, even though, you know, the season's running away. We've got, 100? The Red Sox have played 132 games, so there's 30 games left. So I have this feeling that the Rays are going to catch the Red Sox on the last week of the season. Now, the Red Sox will still be in the playoffs, so it looks like it'll be the loser of Boston-Tampa Bay playing either Cleveland,
Oakland.
If they can keep it up, or Oakland or Texas, the loser of that, which is probably Oakland. So, interestingly enough, I don't think, like you, I agree with you, I don't think that the Orioles or the Yankees have enough. Because at this point, you got to win, you know, you got to go 15-5. So, you've got to win, you know, a decent percent. You got to win at 70-80%, you know, go on a winning streak for a couple weeks. Because, like I said, there's only 30 games left. And you've got to overtake three or four teams. So if you're the Yankees, you know, they're clawing and scratching and doing all they can, but I just don't think they have enough. And similarly, the Orioles, you know, I love that team and I love the composition of the roster. They probably need to get that number one starter. They made a couple of moves and brought in some starters, but they still don't have that, you know, 1-2-3 we talked about, like the Tigers and the Dodgers have and even the Tampa Bay Rays have. So I just don't think they have enough.
No,
but
you're probably right.
It's
going to
against the Cleveland, though, right? We keep talking about Cleveland. They don't go away. And I thought my Kansas City Royals were going to pass them, but those Cleveland Indians don't go away. Shout out to the Midwest and Cleveland, Ohio, and Terry Francona, and good for them. I mean, they can beat their 71-59.
Yeah, nah. My good buddy out here, John Marchese, is a big Indians fan and Cleveland fan, and he's rooting hard for his Indians. And, you know, that's the thing, you know, it does keep it exciting, and I think that's what's so great about the wild card. Maybe they switch it to three games, but having it, you know, then we have these teams that are still alive. Like you said, 30 games left. You know, if we didn't have that wild card, and remember even further years back without any wild card, you know, some of these cities, it would just be, you know, hey, NFL starts, you know, like forget baseball, you know what I mean? But some of these cities, their fans can still continue to, you know, go to the ballpark, be excited, and, you know, and just, you know, keep it going. And let's not even talk about Ray and Tay fantasy baseball, because Tay is looking like he's jacked up, and Ray looking like he's about to make the playoffs.
Well,
what are you, like fifth place? You don't feel like fifth place. I dropped down to like 10th.
Oh, yeah, we got jacked up. We got football on the brain. But, yeah, all those people in fantasy. In fact, in my other fantasy league, we've got playoffs starting next week. So I'm just hoping for no injuries. I want like week four treatment in the NFL, right? No injuries this week. No injuries. I'm just looking at the box score, making sure everybody pitches 5-6 innings, save them for next week. I need you next week. I need you to deliver next week.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's going to be interesting. So, and we've got coming up for our audience, we've got a nice show on Friday. We'll get into some fantasy football. You want to let them know about our guests, too?
Yeah, so on Friday, of course, we've got fantasy football. We'll start to talk about our previews and draft strategies. And I don't know if I could reveal all my strategies, though, because we got
you
people
give them a little taste.
Listening
you give
them, to the
you
show.
Gotta give, I know, but you got to give them a little taste. You know, that's part of your job now, being part of the media and having a sports radio show. Ray's got to reveal a little something, you know.
Give away my strategy. I'm the defending champ. I can't give away the strategy.
We'll
talk about it. But, yeah, we have another special guest on Friday. Her name is Elizabeth Imus Zero. So if you know the name Imus and you grew up, that's her dad. Don Imus is her dad. So she's got a book coming out, and she's doing a press tour. She's very, very funny, interesting, interesting guest. I think
very
you're going to kick out.
Yeah,
very talented. We're a sports talk show. But you know what? We like to bring all facets of life to the show.
Hey, listen, we got stand-up comics. And people that come on our show and entertainers and stuff, you know. So that's something that we've done, obviously, with Pablo Francisco and Sean Savoy. So we've had some stand-up comics on before and, you know, get involved in a little bit of everything, as well as, like, the writers, you know, having Peter Vesey and Ed Odevan from Japan. We should ask him about the Japan team winning the World Series. We'll have to tweet at Ed Odevan, who listens to the show and tweets at us. So, hey, another great show. And then September 4th, ladies and gentlemen, the night before is Ray and Tay NFL preview. And we put our picks on the website. We will put them up after the show, rayandtaytoday.com. But get ready because it's coming. Ray and Tay's football picks. So great show, and thanks for listening. You know,
yeah, we had a blast talking all sports with you, especially baseball this show. Thanks so much to Paul LaDuca, you know, the Brooklyn kid, makes good, comes back to Ray and Tay, talked about his Mets. He's living out in L.A. now.
He loves that L.A., man. He loves the Cali life and the weather. And he's doing broadcasting as well, so that's great.
He's into horses, which was interesting.
Yeah.
So I was like, good for him.
Yeah, just,
all right.
Yeah,
well,
like
thank
friends,
him.
My friend, that's definitely in Patino, yeah. All right, well, listen, great show, and let's send you out with some beats, you know. We got to throw on there a little shout-out to Bruno Mars, who was one guy that was pretty good last night at the MTV Music Awards. Thanks for listening, and thanks for talking sports with friends. See you Friday.
Out.